Hello, and welcome to Carnival Personnel Sideshow. I'm Jock.
This is Biff.
And talking to Biff via text the other day, because I don't think we ever talk on the phone. Only time we talk is when we do the podcast. But I'm like, hey, you got any ideas for, you know, sideshows? And before I could come up with my favorite Jedis, Biff suggested, hey, how about our favorite Twitter followers? Because Twitter, you know, is generally a cesspool of negativity and shitholes, but there's also some upside.
Did you say a cesspool of naked titty? What? I heard naked tits in there.
Is there another kind of tits, Biff? But negativity.
Negativity, you mean?
You know what? Let's go with naked tits. And then you know, Biff said it, our favorite, you know, maybe our top five favorite Twitter follows. And I tried, but then I'm like, how about top 10? So let's dive right in. Biff, what is some, and let's not just rank them, but give me one of your favorite Twitter follows.
Okay, so I did not rank mine.
So I
will start with, you know, something. So this guy is not. So the handle is at David Coverdale. And David Coverdale, for those of you who may have any familiarity with the hair metal, is the lead singer for Whitesnake. And if you know anything about Whitesnake, they're essentially, their lyrics are like, you know how like Aerosmith's lyrics are full of sexual innuendos?
Yes.
You know, Whitesnake's lyrics are kind of like that, but, you know, a little less innuendo and just kind of outright out there. And I mean, you know, when you name a band after your own penis, I mean, you know, that, you know, what do you expect? But so his Twitter, a lot of his stuff are these old inane body stuff, but he just has this, you know, most of these music musicians, they kind of center their Twitter content around kind of the music stuff. But what I really like about David Coverdale's is that most of his stuff is just these garbage, stupid things or memes that he finds or whatever. You know, tends to be on the body side, but just
right.
You know, just inane, and they're always, you know, yeah.
Well, he's great with puns. You know, there's lots of puns.
Absolutely.
And he's at that point in his life where he realizes the ridiculousness of the band, the genre,
and
he pokes fun at himself more. He's like one of those guys, like,
he's,
you know,
definitely self-aware.
Right. He pulled the M&M at the end of 8 Mile, where, you know what? I'm going to shit on myself so much.
Yep.
I'm going to give you no room to make fun of me because I've done it 10 times better than you could.
Absolutely.
No, you know, I don't have any music people on, because a lot
That's
of the
kind of shocking. I was expecting all of the, you know,
no,
Buffalo Tom and Pixies adjacent stuff.
Because like most of the bands that I like and I follow a bunch of them, it's just updated. You know, it's like, here's our next show.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
here's an old album. Today's the 17th anniversary of the B-side to this single we put out. You know, that kind of crap.
Right.
But you know, but the only comedian that I follow.
No,
I follow lots of comedians,
okay.
But again,
okay,
most of them, again, you know, I think they save their materials for their shows and stuff like that. Patton Oswalt has some stuff up there, but Christopher Titus,
absolutely.
He's very funny, but he's also very political, and he's also very smart. And most of the tweets that I see that I like of his is when somebody tries to bring a butter knife to a gunfight with him, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And it's like, dude, he has forgotten more about slapping little pricks like you down. So, you know, and again, he has self-awareness. When somebody, you know, says something that, you know, brings up something that caused him pain in his life or this or that, you know, he runs with it. He'll double down on it. But he's very smart. It's a really good follow. The Christopher Titus.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I like his stuff also. Once again, and I think I do follow him, but, you know, for whatever reason, I probably just don't react to him enough so that his stuff doesn't quite appear right at the front on my Twitter feed as much as, you know, it probably should, but yeah.
Well, you know, I lie. Looking at my list, I do have two comics, but there's another comic, and he's LA-based. Dante the Comic is his Twitter handle. Dude, but he doesn't, the two things that he posts the most, he is a absolute in the streets, and literally in the streets, social justice warrior. His life is stand-up comedy and documenting the atrocities of the LAPD on a daily basis. Almost every night he walks around his neighborhood or a neighborhood in LA just videotaping cops breaking civil liberty, law after law, and he posts it. He gets roughed up by them all the time. And he also, for either beginning stand-up or even season stand-up, he has, like, a running YouTube thing that he also posts on Twitter, his, like, tips of the trade, you know, and a lot of it is great. Like, one recently, for an example, he and his wife, you know, have a booking agency and a company, and they had a flyer for one of their shows, and there was, like, 20 comics on this weekend bill, and I guess a comic got left off and had a hissy fit, and he's and he's like, tip 117, and literally they're in chronological order. He goes, you know, worry about doing the good show and not being on the poster. Plus, don't worry about the booker putting you on the poster. Make your own goddamn poster and get out there. You know, self-promote. And it's really a fun follow if A, you like stand-up comedy, two, you like social justice shit, and three, if you just like, you know, people ripping on their own profession, but in a professional and kind of a constructive criticism way. But that's the only other comic that I had on my list is Dante the Comic and Titan. What else do you got?
Well, so since you're on the comics, the one comic I did put on my list, and obviously I follow a few of them, but the one that I picked out was Jackie Cation, who is not maybe like a household name comic. I actually found her when I went to a Brian Regan show and she opened, and I thought she was brilliant. I thought she was really, really good. And she's appeared on the, you know, on national, you know, late night talk shows and stuff like that. So she's been out there. But the thing that I like about her is that, so she is funny, you know, she's a comic, but then she has kind of this wide range of stuff that she'll put out there. She also has a podcast called Dork Forest, where essentially somebody with like a very singular and kind of niche obsession will talk about their obsession. So, and it could be anything. So literally, like, if I became a little bit more knowledgeable on, say, Japanese, you know, girls metal bands, she may actually take up my offer to be on that show so I could talk about this super niche, you know, genre. But, and so she, and the other thing that I really like about her is that she lives in LA. She's actually, I think, originally from Minnesota, I want to say, but she lives in LA. And so when she goes out, she kind of references a lot of the stuff that I'm kind of here. I'm doing this and this and this. And so like when I'm whatever, I just, I take my takeout at the Samu barbecue, which is essentially a place that I frequent also, that kind of stuff. Right. So there's that connection also. But just in general, I like the wide range of stuff that she kind of covers on top of the comedy stuff. So, you know, obviously we get that. Yeah, I'll be doing this and, you know, at this show, this club, you know, we see the clips from her shows and whatever else. So obviously there's all that. But I just kind of like the overall kind of the wide range of stuff that she covers.
No, she's one of those just really, really smart comics.
Yeah.
You know, Biff, after well over a friendship with you for 25 years, I can't believe that our relationship is just built on a house of lies. I lied, Biff. I lied. I did have a musician on my list. And not only did I have a musician, I have a musician that's still active today, but mostly from the same era that I think might be on your list, Richard Marx.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's a good one. Yeah. And I'll be honest with you, there's a few that I didn't put on. Richard Marx was... I was kind of on the fence with Richard just because as a kind of a person, he's among musicians, right? He's not that monster guy, but I think in Twitter, he's actually relatively big. So like, there's a few people like, I didn't put on people like say George Takei or whatever. Right. But I was kind of on the fence with Richard Marx also.
And again, he's one of those just completely self-aware that his hair at one point of his life was just, I think he loves and misses it at the same time, kind of gets it, like, yeah, that was the most 80s of the 80 hair. My favorite thing is when he talks politics and you know COVIDiots or people from that side just try to, you know, match wits with somebody who has been a performer his entire life. absolutely his entire life. And he's been heckled in probably the shittiest clubs in Chicago coming up. I mean, he was a musician performing as a kid, so he has seen and done it all. And I love when it's like, who cares what this one hit wonder says? And he'll come back with, actually, it's 8 number one hits. And if you count the songs I've written for other people that have gotten to number one, it's 17. But hey, who's counting? Yeah.
You know, well, or that and it, aren't his like his little Twitter things with Chachi, aren't those the best? Like
just the best.
Just the best, right?
And it's clear that, okay, a guy who's known for, you know, a short-lived sitcom and whatever, you know, just you just can't go toe-to-toe with him. And well,
actually, you know, it's not. I don't think it's that. I think the problem is that Chachi just isn't as sharp as Richard Marx is. I mean, because when it comes down to it, like he was on like the biggest show of that era, right? Because he was on Happy Days. I mean, you know, Joni Loves Chachi is a spinoff, but he was on Happy Days.
He was a big character.
There is stuff that he can act, you know, so he doesn't have to, you know, really. He basically has no response for when they corner him for him being, you know, Chachi from the Chachi and Joni, right? And whereas, you know, Richard Marx is so much smarter and he's better prepared, I guess. Whatever it is, right? And so.
Yep. And a couple quick things. First of all, we've talked about it before, and why was the show Joni Loves Chachi never aired in Korea?
I have no idea.
Chachi's penis in Korean.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I know that from management. The other thing, and I've talked about this before, I got to spend an amazing day with Richard Marx at a Fontucky racetrack because he sang the anthem once. And, you know, his manager, DQ, is a great, great, great friend of mine. And I will tell you really quickly, it's one of my favorite stories of the 100-plus anthems with celebrities I've done, and you've been to some of this. This is one of my favorite stories. He's in the media room at the track, and it's, you know, it's all NASCAR, like, you know, writers and pundits and stuff like that. But they were really happy. It was a great little interview. And then one guy kind of raised his hands and he goes, so is it true? And if so, how is Richard Marx best friends with Free Weibo from, you know, White Punks on Dope, you know, fame from the Tubes? And Richard points because he goes, well, why did you ask him? And the guy looks over in the corner because he showed up at the track with Free Weibo from the Tubes. And which is funny because Richard Marx, you know, you and him are about the same height, and Free Weibo, I think, is like 6'12". You know, he's just a really big guy. And, you know, and then he tells the story about, you know, Richard being a studio rat and just being around and, you know, engineering at a young age, and kind of Free took him under his wing, and they're like godfather to each other's kids. But the guy's face, who absolutely you could tell is a big Tubes fan, just he's like, oh my god, it's like, here I am interviewing Richard Marx and I get to meet it. Dude, it was a great thing. But as far as him a Twitter follow,
yeah
he has, I believe he has a Twitter, like a best of his tweet book coming out like this Christmas, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I've heard something like that.
He's definitely, you know, there are just guys that, I mean, part of it is that he, like you said, he really gets it, right? He's self-aware, but yeah, I think he's, you know, obviously a really smart guy.
Smart guy, really sweet guy. Yeah, and again, if you ever want to fall down the rabbit hole, you look at who he's written songs for and you're like, wait a minute. He's written songs for, like, you know, of course, the contemporary pop stuff. But then how many country artists have gone to number one with his stuff? So
I didn't know without looking up that he wrote Vixen's debut single, Edge of a Broken Heart. That's a Richard Marx song.
I Meet Your David Coverdale with Richard Marx. So what else you got?
It's different. Yeah.
They're both great. Both great follows.
Yeah. I think Marx, like even guys like, you know, Rex Chapman, like I had to, I did not put Rex Chapman on the list, and maybe I should have. But you know what? Since I've brought him up,
don't put him on your list. Because I have him on mine, so why don't you talk about it?
So I'll talk about something else then. Since we're talking about musicians, obviously I can't go through this entire list without at least having one Japanese all-girl rock band follow. And so I have one called, the musician's name, she goes by F. Chopper Koga, which kind of looks like the way she writes it. It looks like Fuck Koga, and I think that's very intentional on them. And the Twitter handle is FKOGA_GS. And so she's the leader, founder, and bassist for a Japanese all-girls rock band called Gacharic Spin. And I think the thing that I like about her, and you know, many of these Japanese bands kind of follow the same thing that they have the same trait that I really like, which is that they like really work so hard to create content, and especially during COVID, where I think that you know, obviously COVID was a brutal time for everybody, but like they literally went out and just did like these random, you know, like they made extra songs, you know, so, and I think a lot of people were doing that. They also did all these goofy things, like they covered their own, they performed their own songs where everybody in the band was performing using kids' instruments. So, you know, you have those little, you know, yep, whatever, you know, those little Hello Kitty-ish drum sets and, you know, whatnots, right? So, and so I just marvel at the amount of effort that they put in to essentially, you know, just continuously create content, you know, for their band. And they're, you know, they're a band that's not huge in Japan. I think they're a band that would essentially sell out a 1,500-seater level band. But they're kind of, you know, relatively well known, you know, and they've done, you know, their national TV appearances and stuff like that. So,
have they made it to LA? Have you seen them in person?
They have not made it to LA. They made it to San Francisco once and Houston once, both tied to like these anime fests. So, so I had not seen them. And when they played San Francisco, I had not known them. That was like, I want to say that was about 2015 or so. So it was before I actually, you know, knew about them. But yeah,
I love the bands that use kid toys. Like OK Go is big with that, where you're like, wait a minute, what does that sound? And then you see it's like they release a song a little. And it's like a little kid's, like maybe there's 10, 12 keys on it that you get in the toy outlet, you know, keyboard at like Target type thing. No, but that's great.
Well, I think you did some work with Zakk Wylde. Is that right? You did something with Zakk Wylde, or?
I think so.
Yeah, well, Zakk Wylde has a thing where he does some songs with the Hello Kitty guitar.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I will let management know. So you know what? It's on my list, but I'll let you talk about Rex Chapman.
Well, I think, you know, he's a guy with, one thing is that I like his general positivity, right? I mean, he's a guy that we know kind of where he stands on a lot of things. But obviously it helps that I agree with him, you know, basically socio-politically, right? So that definitely helps. But I just think that there is so much positivity to what he posts, and you know, the fact that he is a recovering addict, and you know, there's a lot of, I think the one thing that's really not unique, but what I really like about him is that I think in general there's a lot of empathy to the way he essentially handles his tweets. I mean, obviously he has no time for people with, you know, who are just, you know, the outright jerks that are just basically, you know, in the name of whatever you want to call it, you know, essentially what they do is trying to essentially ruin other people's lives for,
right, for, right.
You know. So he has no patience for those people, but I think he definitely has a lot of, I really like the sense of empathy that he shows for a lot of these people. So I think in that sense, I think, you know, he's that Twitter handle with a heart kind of a guy. So that's really what I like about him.
No, I agree. I like a lot of the, you know, if you've seen baby penguins, like, you know, playing together already today, they keep strolling. And yeah, I love when people come at him and they throw his, like, you know, past addictions in his face, and he's like, and he turns it into a positive. He's like, yeah, I learned so much from it. I now get to help people with it. And thank you for bringing attention to this. One of my favorite tweets is like, somebody's like, throw out a fact about yourself that's hard to believe, that's true. And this one, I remember this. It was a while ago. He's like, the first NBA game I ever saw in person, I played it.
Yeah, that one was a good one. I mean, I had to explain to James how good of a player he, like, obviously James, you know, my son got to know, you know, found him as a Twitter follow. And he goes, hey, was Rex Chapman a basketball player? He said, oh, yeah. I mean, he wasn't just a basketball player. I mean, he was freaking good. I mean, he was great. I mean, you know, like, he's, you know, win a slam dunk contest good. I mean, he was that level good, you know. And so he goes, wow. And, you know, it's like this. Now, I mean, obviously, there's an entire generation of people who only know him as the dude on Twitter.
Which is crazy right. Funny. So who else do you got?
So because you went to that direction, I'm going to put one that is the handle is at Chomati. It's actually kind of an aggregator thing. I put it on the chat right now. But if you basically this Twitter handle, this is the cute animal aggregator, Twitter. And there's a few of them. But I just happen to like this one. And so obviously, I just feel like in the midst of all of, and especially now, right, so much Ukraine content, and justifiably so. So, every once in a while when I see that, like you said, like the penguins being weighed at a zoo, stuff, that kind of stuff. Yeah. I feel like I need that content in between all of the stuff that, that is coming on Twitter right now. So definitely highly recommend it to anybody if they just want that stupid animal tweet.
I can't believe how often I'd be like, wait a minute, am I liking a kitten thing right now on Twitter?
As you should.
Those are great. And those are a lot of fun. I'm be surprised if this isn't on your list or you thought about putting on your list, but Super 70 Sports.
Yeah. Great Twitter handle. It is one of those ones where I definitely considered it, but go ahead and why don't you talk about it?
He's big on sports, like huge, right. Funny sport moments, like great fun sports moments. No politics, which is really nice. I think he leans more our way, but definitely not as far left as me, but he's a great follow. Lot of fun sports thing. Also big on posting like pictures of children at a school playground in the 70s where the apparatuses are all metal and it's in Arizona, so it's 100 degrees and the sun, and they're like, tell me you didn't just get a second degree burn on your legs looking at this slide.
the metal tube slides, right? Like those right things, like the worst.
And I don't want to say, because I don't know, he's pro smoking, but he is always posting like these great photos of athletes in dugouts of like, nothing like lighting up a cancer nail after hitting a 2-run homer. And it's a picture of Dave Parker from like 1978 in there with, smoking, whatever it is. It's or he'll post old cigarette ads and it's like, this guy looks like he's enjoying washing off in a creek after going on a murder spree and enjoying a little flavor country while he's doing it, and it will be a coal cigarette hat or something like that. But he's probably our age, right in between your age and my age, like right in that sweet spot of mid-50s where he is delighted that he survived the 70s and early 80s right. as a child, confused. My favorite tweet of his of all time, and I've sent it to the group a number of times, I've liked it every time he posts it. It's a picture of Bobby Orr from 1972 when Bobby Orr won every trophy.
Right.
The Norris Trophy, the Conn Smythe Trophy, the Art Ross Trophy, and the Cup. And he's like, nowadays, everybody gets a trophy. I remember a day when only Bobby got trophies. it's a great one. So what else? What's next on your list?
Well, since you kind of went to the sports, not surprisingly, I have a few hockey ones in here. So I'm going to start with one that's called Hey Shay. It's a woman named Shayna Goldman, and she's currently a writer for The Athletic, but she also does some work for Sportsnet. And so what I really like about her, and there's a few other follows. Allison Lucan's another one that I really like, but it's one of those people that lets me really understand the advanced stats against what's really happening on the ice. And so she's great at presenting what happened in the game in the context of advanced stats. So you could see essentially when she talks about, so I have this game where, say, Igor Shesterkin is standing on his head. And so New York Rangers have no business winning this game, and here's why. And you see, like, these attack zone heat maps of all the shots that Shesterkin has, you know, has faced, where he's only allowed one goal among them. And then she sees all of the stuff that the Rangers has done on their end. It's like, yeah, they haven't done squat except on the power play. And so it's like there's great visualization. And I think that one of the big things is that I'm at a point where I am freaking sick and tired of the old hockey men who, you know, they talk about, oh, you can't measure hard, you can't measure grit. And you know what? It turns out you freaking can.
You can, yeah. I mean,
you know, because those things come in the, you know, they manifest themselves in stats like takeaways and, you know, possession and stuff like that. Those things, it turns out, are completely measurable. And when we say, oh, this guy sucks, and he goes, oh, well, you know, he's a whatever rugged defenseman. Like the old hockey guys, like a guy on the team that you like, Derek Forbort, is a guy that the old hockey man likes, you know, kind of slow, but old and rugged. And, you know, he's the guy that cross checks players in front of the net. But you know what? He's a garbage defenseman. He's crap.
Right.
And so people like her will kind of show you why people like that might be garbage.
Does she work for somebody? Is this, yeah, like, does she collect the stats for somebody, or is it just a hobby?
Yeah. So it's interesting how this stuff works. So she actually works for The Athletic. She's got the New Jersey and occasional. She used to do New York Rangers, but now she does New Jersey Devils and then also some Rangers stuff on the side. And she also does some content for Sportsnet. So she's out there in kind of these national outlets. But the way a lot of this stuff works is that there's other organizations like Natural Stat Trick being one of them. Elite Sports or something like that being another. There's a few organizations that actually manage and track advanced stats that these people basically use to essentially, and they could use it however way they want. And some of them will even kind of create their own stats or measurements, metrics based on stats that they get from these other, you know, organizations. So it's actually really cool the way these stats are working in sports in general. So what she basically does is she looks at the stats, these advanced stats as compiled by these other places, and she kind of puts it into a context that we could all really understand.
If we're going to stick on, if we're going to stick to like sports for just a second, when I give you, and this made my top favorite list of Twitter follows, and I'm not being sarcastic. It's a Twitter handle called Biff Plays Hockey. And I truly get 95% of my hockey, my hockey knowledge of what's going on in the NHL today outside the Boston Bruins from the handle Biff Plays Hockey. Cause so much, no, seriously, first of all, most of the stuff you post is fun. I love when you have like the Japanese stuff on there, cause you post a lot of these metal bands and I check out so many of the clips. It's funny because it's just funny when I see your tweets come through in Japanese, right, sometimes. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, as long as there's a link I can click on, I can see what he's talking about. But so many times you're like, oh, this just happened in this game, and if I have access to the remote and management doesn't have the TV and we're not watching, you know, one of her things, it's like, oh, I'll flip it over to the NHL Network to see what you're talking about. And you retweet, like, you know, the Black Girls Hockey, this other site. So there's so much in and around the game that I just want to know what's going on. So I truly, it's not because you're a buddy of mine. It's because a lot of the stuff you put out there, I'm like, oh yeah, this is really interesting. Oh fuck, I didn't know that. And I love when I send a tweet to the hockey group from you and you're like, yeah, where did you learn that, John? Like, oh, hey, thanks for bringing this to my attention that you saw from me yesterday. But no, seriously, you are one of my favorite Twitter followers.
Well, thank you.
What else do you got?
So sticking with the hockey. So, I mean, this is a big public, classic blue check mark, Twitter, but I love the Carolina Hurricanes Twitter handle at Canes. I mean, I think those guys just know how to do it. Like they just know how to do it. And, you know, they're funny, they're irreverent, you know, and obviously when Don Cherry went off on the bunch of jerk stuff, I mean, those guys went bananas. I mean, they're just a funny And I'm sure each league has one, you know, a few of those, you know, handles. But I think the Canes are the OG in the NHL. And well, a few, you know, the few newer ones are pretty good now. But
I wonder if are the Carolina Panthers from North Carolina or South Carolina?
I
wonder if they have, because the Panthers,
the Panthers one is really good too. Yeah,
right. So I wonder if there's cross promotion. I wonder if some guys work on both of them. I wonder, because you're right. It's like and again, that's something I wouldn't know about unless I saw it on your thing when you tweet some of their stuff, and they are hysterical apps. Yeah. And I think again, you had tweeted a couple years ago. And they took so much planning, the Carolina Panthers, and I would have to look up what the prank is, but the first letter in word spelled something out that was great. But that I'll go back and maybe post my find out. So you know, here's a one, and I'm like, wait a minute, is this really one of my favorite things? It might not have been my favorite thing a year ago. It might not be a top 10 of mine in a year from now. But a little while ago, like four months ago, when I fell down the rabbit hole that is Hammer Horror Films.
Okay, right.
I started, you know, they have a Twitter page and they're always posting, you know, stills from their movies or not just their movies, just from the horror genre. I'm not a horror guy per se, but I know, having grown up in the 70s and seeing like Creature Double Feature and seeing Creature from the Black Lagoon, like every third Saturday was shown on our, you know, TV, or all the Bela Lugosi stuff or the original. There's lots of stills from, you know, and it's great when they always post like stills of, you know, Bela Lugosi, like in his makeup, or, you know, the Nosferatu stuff. But by the way, Nosferatu, dude. Yeah. This is the 100th year of that movie, and it still might be the best Dracula. I mean, there's been what? If that movie's 100 years old, there's at least 200 vampire movies out there, and I don't know if any are more scary than Nosferatu. But yeah.
There's something about black and white movies, right? There's a certain creepiness that black and white movies have that you don't get out, you know.
With skipped frames here and there.
Yes. All that stuff.
But Hammer Horror Films, and then, you know, they always have, like, you know, stills of just the most beautiful actresses from like the 40s and the 50s and the, who played in those and stuff like that. And just, it's a really fun, if you like old Hollywood, there's a couple old Hollywood things that I follow, but that's been the one that I've seen the most lately. And I'm surprised when I was going through my list. I'm like, I scrolled through my Twitter like the last few months and see what I liked and what I retweeted, and I'm like, yeah, I have to put this on the list.
Yeah, and you know, the way they used to make horror back then was just very different, right? I mean, it was just not, you know, it's not like, it was more suspense. Obviously, because, you know, we didn't have the special effects and everything else. I mean, they had to essentially kind of construct fear in a very different way, right? So.
Yeah, no, it was great.
So it wasn't quite as, you know, it's not as gory, right, as it is, you know. You know, I guess like Night of the Living Dead probably changed all that, but
right. Yeah, no, I think that's a tipping point, because you and I think that's one of the reasons why it's interesting. There's a couple good documentaries you can find on YouTube about the history of Hammer Films and how they came out of nowhere. They overtook Universal. And then Universal's like, we can't compete, so we're going to partner with them. But I think once Night of the Living Dead hit, it kind of changed it. And that's where, you know, Christopher Lee and Paul, or Peter Cushing's and stuff like that, who you had these great thespians as Dr. Frankenstein and Count Dracula. And it just went a different route after that. It went less great acting and more shock and blood. So what else? Well, what next?
Well, since you kind of hit, you know, kind of adjacent to that old Hollywood type of content, at Allison Martino, and her Twitter handle is kind of labeled Vintage Los Angeles, but it's Allison Martino.
Right.
And Allison Martino, she actually happens to be the daughter of a singer named Al Martino, who actually did, I think he did a song in The Godfather, in addition to appearing having a role in The Godfather. So, you know, she's one of those people who essentially has seen the old Hollywood, has been in, you know, classic Hollywood for many years. And, you know, her Twitter posts are great because we get this, you know, now that I've been in LA for so long and entrenched here for so long, just to see the familiar streets in a different context is great, or the familiar streets the way I remember it, because she'll post a lot of things, you know, the way it looked in 1986 or whatever the case may be, right? So, I really did appreciate her recent tweet where I think they did, and I didn't watch the segment, but there was an in memoriam thing pertaining to like, there was some Godfather related segment on the Oscars, and she was really upset that, you know, they just kind of created this new whatever, put just garbage music over it, which they could have just used her dad's original music, which was already perfect. And which, you know what, I'm obviously, you know, a little bit of bias, but then at the same time, you know, conceptually, I think she's 100%
right. 100% right. You know, I almost put her tweet on, and that's another one. I share it with the group sometimes, but lots of times I just send it to our friend Taylor, who grew up in Los Angeles in the late 50s and the 60s, and I'm like, no, you're not having an acid flashback, this, you know, or, but he'll remember all that stuff. No, that's a great call, that, you know, that, because it's not old Hollywood. Here's an old picture of, like, you know, Zsa Zsa Gabor. It's like,
right.
Hey, shout out to this hot dog stand that lasted 60 years, it's been gone for 20, that I still miss, type thing.
Yeah, and you know, she's got so many great stories, right? Because she's been there and done that. So she talks, I mean, I think my favorite stuff that she puts out is often things about, like, restaurants and who the patrons were, and like how, like Jimmy Stewart had a set, you know, a reserved table for him at this restaurant. And, you know, and then one day this person, you know, all these stories that she has, just, you know, just absolutely great, right? So there's some, one of those little, and maybe stuff that they, you know, they could talk about now, because, you know, you're not going to publish that in, you know, 1970, so that all these fans flock and essentially, you know, nail these people, you know, trying to just have lunch, right? So it's one of those things that you could talk about now, and, you know, and it's kind of great that there was a little bit of respect back then in regards to, at least, you know, not publicizing where these people just hung out, right?
That's so. You know, here's another Twitter handle that I've been following for a while now, that I've learned probably more about politics in the world from a real intellectual point of view.
Uh-huh.
Former guest Professor Cook. If you check out his, he is. Great.
Yeah, and so I follow him now since, you know, since we basically, when you tweeted that the special, you know, the Sideshow won out, you know, I picked up, and I, you know, obviously I follow all of our guests, but yeah, his tweets are fantastic, and just some, you know, obviously he kind of sees it in a very academic way, right? Rather than, it's not a gut reaction, right? It's very kind of academic and kind of really fact driven, right? So it's really a really useful, and, you know, obviously so that I think that in that sense, that is definitely something that I've really appreciated ever since, you know, I got that follow.
So I, you know, and it's fun because it's also sometimes really personal, where he taught a class that just went sideways, or somebody that he follows, who's another person in academia, had like a bad class, or just a student who was an a-hole, and he'll retweet it with a comment that's like, well, look at the bright side, you get to go back to class tomorrow and teach him again, type thing. So, and it is, it's fun. It's like he leans, you know, the same way that we do politically, but at the same time, his tweets generally aren't emotional driven like all of mine are. You know, they're
shocking to hear that, Jock. Really? More,
yeah, but Professor Cook is a really great follow. Yeah, you know, not just because he's now a friend of the podcast and a personal friend from college, but yeah, it's a great, great follow that if you kind of want to. It's almost like getting the Cliff Notes from your class every day without having to drive to, you know, upstate Pennsylvania to take one.
Right. It's a nice town. I love that town.
So, you do,
I spend a lot of time there.
And
I
again,
have friends
the filming site of Slapshot. So there you go. Yeah. All right, what else you got?
So this that is kind of like the perfect segue to a Twitter handle that I have, and it's one at Ross Salowich.
Ah.
And obviously, you know, coming from a tech school and having people working in, you know, similar industries, like I know he's done kind of NOAA adjacent work, and I have friends in NOAA among other places. Once again, he does have a nice mix. I don't know what he, next time we chat, I have to talk to him about his ornithology thing, because there's a lot of these, you know, heron photos that he takes that, and they're beautiful photos. I love his bird photos, but you know, I do have to kind of chat about his ornithology thing. But
is that the big boy word for bird watching?
Sure, it's a study of birds, right?
Okay, like, you know, actually have a joke in my stand up about that. But yeah, over the last few years, he's got into photography and bird watching, right. But yeah, again, he'll have a really smart, you know, thing on the environment or this or that, and then a bunch of bird photos. So
But, and that's the thing, right? You know, his obviously the environmental activists have a lot of emotionally charged tweets, whereas you know he actually gives us, once again, similar to Dr. Cook, a really academic, you know, kind of a set of information, right? So I think I really like that aspect of, you know, what he does. So I think, you know, in that sense, you know, they have kind of similar aspects to it, but yeah.
So you know what? Let's stay on the personal friend train bandwagon, if you will. And I mean this. I don't know if you follow our old friend Woody.
Absolutely, yeah, dude.
Woody has always been a great friend. He's one of the first friends I made in LA.
Yeah.
He's kind of an odd duck in all the best ways. As again, a friend Taylor would say, "What do you expect you're going to meet when you're playing pickup hockey on a Friday night in Van Nuys at 2 a.m? You know, and Woody's from that thing. But that motherfucker is funny.
And
the people that he follows are very funny as well.
Yep.
And so a lot of his back and forth with people that I don't know if are personal friends or people he become friends with, but it's almost he has a couple of Laurel and Hardy routines with a couple of the Twitter handles in his realm.
Right.
He also started to make TikToks.
I didn't know he had these. I mean, I knew he did video editing.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was, I guess he did that whole.
Oh, and I, right? So. He happened to be in the neighborhood a few weeks ago, and I'm like, dude, who is that guy? He has a tenant. He has an part. And that guy's an actor who I'm going to post it if I can remember this. He just shot a series of off-track betting commercials for Australia, which wait for it, with Gene Simmons. You know, and they're hilarious. And so I'm like, you know, Gene Simmons, another person that I, you know, humble brag that I did an anthem with for the Oakland Raiders. Anyways, but Woody's shit is funny. And the videos he does are funny, and just the tweets and you know, I think it's Woodrow Peel. And he just started another one. And I'm trying to remember. It's like, Earthlink dial-up PR department. It's something like that. Woody has an axe to grind for 25 years with Earthlink, and he's getting his vengeance now. And again, like he had a personal. Long story short, he signed up for like a month trial, and it took him like a year to get off of it. Like they wouldn't cancel his automatic renewal. It took him a year. And he's still bitter about it 20 years later. And I guess it's still around. And so it's like Earthlink dial-up PR department. And one of the funny tweets a couple of weeks ago was like, okay, which one of you assholes tried to download the TikTok app because you just crashed all our servers? You know, it's like, but honestly, I've known Woody for a long time. Always a funny guy. Always a funny guy. But honestly, of all the stand-up comics, the comic, the TV stuff that I follow, he is one of the funniest Twitter handles you can follow.
It is hilarious. Is it just me, or does he remind you of Richard Lewis?
Yes, very much. Very, very much of a Richard Lewis in all the best ways.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and a great guy. An avid sweetheart of a human being. Funny as hell. Okay, we only got a couple more. What do you got?
Okay, so I have one more music one, and it's a guy named Mitch LaFon, last name LaFon. So first name Mitch. That's his Twitter handle, at Mitch LaFon. He is kind of a hard rock, but kind of on the softer end of the hard rock guy. So, and I think a lot of people have heard of Eddie Trunk. What I like about Mitch LaFon is that there is so much negativity in Eddie Trunk stuff. Even though he's kind of knowledgeable and stuff like that, and he knows a lot of people, there is so much negativity in Eddie Trunk's stuff that I don't really enjoy it. Whereas Mitch LaFon, a super positive guy, and he understands that the music that so he'll push, say, a band like Bon Jovi or Poison or whatever, right? And obviously those bands are easy to kind of jump on. I get it. But the way he responds to it is just so positive. And not surprisingly, he's a Canadian dude. In that sense, there's this other weird thing that happens where during the hockey season, his tweets also involve his beloved Canadiens. So it's kind of, I get this wacky mix of, oh, wow, you know, Canadiens content out of a, you know, hair metal guy kind of a thing. But he does a lot of this, you know, I guess what he basically does is a lot of these, you know, he has a podcast, he does these interviews, and, you know, he has a business adjacent to that. And so there, that aspect of it is great. And then also he actually has a younger guy who basically is trying to do the same kind of thing. And so, you know, a guy who is competition really, but basically the guy just mentored him, helped him. They do stuff together. And now the other guy, I think his name is Jeremy White, also is doing pretty well doing this stuff where he really essentially developed, you know, a guy who is in essence his competitor, you know, so a guy who is, you know, has that kind of generosity. So I think just in general, I like the guy for the way he seems to be, you know, and plus the content is, you know, the shit I care about. So
that's great. No, those are fun. And here's probably one of the most fun. And I'd be really surprised if this was on your list. Holy Batcast. And it's like, first of all,
do they have a theme or anything like that? Like, does Hurana have a theme?
I'll tell you, the guy who is, he hosts a podcast. He hosts a Batman podcast. He hosts a couple Batman podcasts.
Wow. He,
and of all the people I think I follow who I don't personally know on Twitter, I think this is a guy I would like to grab a beer with most. And I mean it. His name is Andy DiGenova, and he hosts a couple podcasts, Real Fans for Real Film. But the Holy Batcast one, it's primarily Batman, it's DC stuff. But the dude has worked his whole adult life at theme parks, and he actually went to China for, like, I think it was a 2-year window a few years ago. To open up like Universal China over there. So, and he's still, and it's funny because one of his co-hosts is in Australia and one of them is in Indianapolis. And so balancing the time zones.
Oh my God.
I think he's from LA, but he lives in Florida now. I think he worked at Universal and he tweets a lot about theme, you know, park stuff. As far as this Batman, he's even more pro Batman than me, if you can believe it. But
I can because of, I find that the Batman people are kind of insane. I'm kind of passionate. Yeah, passionate is the word I'm looking for.
But he's a really cerebral guy. It's really smart. It's a really a fun podcast. Like the two guys, like I said, who host it with him, once in Australia. And it's funny because I think I might have found the guy in Australia first who used to have a Green Lantern the Nightlight. So it was a Batman / Green Lantern podcast, and I think I accidentally found Holy Batcast through this. Now, this guy is like 15 years younger than us, so he loves the Michael Keaton Batman. Like, that's when he was a kid, like when he was like 10, when those movies came out. So that's really in his wheelhouse. So he likes the Schumacher, you know, Batman and stuff like that, which is fine. Again, he was a kid when those came out, so God bless him. He's wrong, but, you know, because Christian Bale, as we know, is the best Batman, and Affleck a close second. I know you disagree.
Well, I mean, for one thing, I think part of it is that it is, I think it's kind of unfair to say one is best in terms of, because
true,
there essentially there's three distinct approaches to Batman, right? I mean, the Adam West Batman and the I'll ignore the Schumacher Batman, but I'll say Burton Batman and then, you know, the Christopher Nolan Batmans. Those are three very distinct approaches. Right. So I think there's a preference of, I like this approach better. So it's like kind of picking a cuisine, right?
And so what I like is he's a very positive guy. Yeah. You know, and he's one of those people who doesn't have to shit on Marvel movies to like DC movies, you know, and just doesn't get why, you know, people have to, you know, it's like he's like, hey, you know, I love all Batman. I like this one more. Not like, oh, that one's a piece of shit. I can't believe they ruined the franchise. And so, like I said, the people he has on, I also like podcast hosts who really kind of not only know their stuff, but are just positive. Like, again, like with Rex Chapman. You know, his stuff is always up. And, you know, when he doesn't talk personal a lot, but when he does, it's usually fun. You know, he just had his first kid, you know, and you can tell he loves being a dad. And it's funny because when you listen to the podcast now, he used to go and see a new Batman movie like 7 days in a row when a new Batman movie came out. And now he was very, very happy to see it opening weekend and one more time in the theater, knowing that the next 20 viewings will be at home with his, you know, daughter, you know, who's months old. And it's kind of fun to see the personal side. But like I said, he's somebody who lives with Batman, lives with theme parks. No, not a hockey guy, but hey, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right? But holy Batcast, it's a really fun follow.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
I got one more, but you got one more, I think.
I got one more.
What do you got?
So I got the last one that I have is at Mina Kimes. Mina Kimes, a big name. And I think that, well, I kind of debated putting her on because she's relatively on the big side, but I think that she is kind of a unique animal where she is a, you know, a complete layperson, but really, you know, one of the best NFL analysts I've ever seen. I mean, her analysis is just so freaking smart. But what I obviously love is the kind of the garbage that goes on because, oh yeah, here's a woman who's never seen the inside of a huddle talking about NFL. It's like, yeah, dude, yeah, just shut the fuck
up. Just shut up.
Right? But I mean, she is so smart. But and then the thing is, though, she has this great rapport with her various co-hosts on the NFL live shows. And in particular, I love the way she interacts with Dan Orlovsky, who is a, you know, former quarterback, and obviously, and those two kind of go at it, and it's hilarious. I mean, they're just so serious, and just some of the random takes that they have, and just the stuff that, you know, random stuff that goes on behind the scenes. I mean, they don't quite have the vibes of the NBA studio show on TNT. You know, it's not
right.
It's a little bit different than that, but they still have that real fun vibe. Yet, my God, just, you know, it's like one of those things that where they're talking something super serious and then it just turns on a dime. And so I just love that about that show in general. And I think, but among them, I think Mina Kimes is just super smart. And so I think, you know, I really like the stuff that she brings to the table.
That's great. My last one, the only way you would have ever seen this Twitter feed is if for some reason you saw the things that I've liked. And it's kind of a newer Twitter handle. I think the guy's probably been on it for like 3 or 4 months. Maybe he's been on it longer and I just found it, but it's called Honest Larry. And it's an all Boston sports from the 70s and 80s for the most part. Not a lot of Bruin stuff, not a lot of Patriot stuff, but lives for the 70s and 80s Red Sox and the I mean, he'll also post stuff from like the Celtics from the 60s or, you know, now, you know, current stuff. I think he's probably like 5-6 years older than me, maybe a little more. Maybe he's retired, but it's all this Boston sports centric stuff. But it's also very, very funny. You know, and his dog is named after Mookie's bat, and he lives on a lake somewhere, and he posts these fun things like throwing his ball and throwing a tennis ball off his like deck and watching the dog jump in and get it. So it's another palate cleanser sometimes. It's like, hey, let's take a break from bullshit and watch this cute older dog, you know, jump into a lake, you know. So it's fun. But like, and then there's also like a couple burner fake Boston accounts of old guys who used to work on like TV 38 during Bruins broadcasts who follow him, and like this guy Tom Larson, and I saw the account, and Joe's like, yeah, you know, that's not the real dude, right? And then he sent me a couple of the guy's older tweets. It's like, no, that's not Tom Larson. But I'm like, wait a minute. Tom Larson is the in-studio host of TV 38 through the late 70s and 80s with the Bruins. And he had, and I found that account through this Honest Larry account. But if you like, it's something that I reached Ross, because you know Ross lives for the 80s Celtics. I'm like, yeah, Ross, you might want to start following this guy, because he has about 10 tweets a day of old pictures of, like, you know, the Celtics from the glory days of the 80s.
Right.
You know, and it's fun. Or funny stories and stuff like that. But that's my list. You know, Biff, this was a lot of, you know, and like I said, you know, to start the show, there's a lot of naked tits, as you said, negativity on Twitter. But there's also a lot of really fun, really smart, you know, really cool things out there. And you'll have to, when this podcast, you know, drops, you'll post yours. I'll post my thing. I don't think we've had any arguments. I don't think there's anything that you put out there that I want to check out. Or I think at least half the things that you put out there, I could have possibly had on my list. Coverdale, for sure. I had Rex Chapman, but you thought about it and stuff like that.
Rex Chapman and Richard Marks, I thought about both of them only, but then I kind of figured, you know what? Everybody kind of knows about them. I think the biggest one that I probably put out is my last one, which is probably Mina Kimes is probably the biggest handle that I put out there.
Right.
Because, and you know, ESPN football, obviously, she's being a kind of a primary talent there, but you know, she was the only one that I called out. But yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I'm not kidding. When I have you, when I have Woody, honestly, great follows. You know, Professor Cook, great follow. You had Ross, so
yeah.
We might circle back. I'm looking at my one of my many Ahsoka, Atano, Lego figures on my desk. I might make you do it or listen to me do my favorite Jedi podcast. But in the meantime, this was a lot of fun.
Yep,
good call, Biff. Good call.